Welcome to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBear 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in health care to help their patients live longer, healthier lives. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at thewolf.com, kbear102.com, or wccy.com. My guest in this segment is Jennifer Billock, who is an editor and freelance writer and the author of a new book that is currently out entitled Images of America, Keweenaw County. Thank you, Jennifer, for joining me.
No problem. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit of background of the other works that you have done in the past.
Mostly I've done magazine articles, culinary travel writing, lifestyle kind of things. I also edit self-publishing manuscripts and some cookbook editing as well.
And how? And just if I could ask, if you could lead that into how you got involved into creating this piece?
Okay. Well, my husband's family has a cottage up in on Bujak Road in Houghton County, and so we go up there as often as we can, and I just kind of fell in love with the area. And I noticed in the Images of America series with Arcadia Publishing that they did not have one about Keweenaw County, but they had one about Houghton County and about the mine railroads and things like that. And so I thought it would be a great idea to, you know, come up with a book for Keweenaw County to really celebrate the area and its history, and not just lump it in with Houghton County and the mining history.
And what was the process like? Because I mean, I read through the book and I saw some of these pictures, and some of them were really old, way back in time. What was the process like getting all this footage?
What I had to do was do a lot of research, so I could figure out how I wanted to organize the book and exactly what pictures that I needed. And then I did some interviews with some local residents, and the rest of the pictures I got from the Michigan Tech Archives and the Keweenaw Historical State Park, their archives as well. And then I met someone online who I had a Kickstarter campaign to try and raise money for the licensing fees for the book, because they can get really expensive.
Oh, yeah.
So someone who saw the Kickstarter campaign that lived in Texas, I believe, he emailed me and he said, "Hey, I have family in Keweenaw County. I have all these postcards that are at the archives. If you want to use them, I won't tell them to charge you." So that was a neat little thing that happened. But yeah, mostly it was just a lot of research and looking through digital archives, either online or at the facility themselves.
Was there ever a snag in the process, or any kind of difficulties you had getting any of this footage?
Getting the pictures, not really. One of the issues when I put together the book was that they're very specific mm-hmm. on the quality of the pictures and the size and everything. So I had to scramble to replace like 7 or 8 of the pictures at the last minute. So I would say that was the only snag, but it really wasn't all that difficult. So,
was there a selection process? Like, is this the only pictures that you could find, or was there a lot of pictures that you had to dwindle down to a specific number?
There were thousands of pictures.
Wow.
It was a boatload. So what I did was I knew I wanted to separate the book into 4 different sections. So I looked for pictures for those sections specifically, mm-hmm. and my first criteria was if I liked the picture.
Of course.
And then my second was, did it show something unique about the area, either something that's no longer there or something that's still there that people can go look at and compare to the picture? And then after that, I wanted pictures that had people in them so that, you know, readers could connect to the book that way as well.
Were there any pictures where you were getting into that, you know, process and you were like, man, I really don't want to have to, you know, leave this one out, but you had to? Were there any ones that you could remember?
Yes, there's 2. So there's a picture of the gay baseball park, mm-hmm. Which I don't think it still exists, but it was a baseball diamond and stands and everything in Bay, Michigan. And the photo was so cool, and I absolutely loved it, but the quality was just way too low for them to accept it. So I had to get rid of that one. And the other one was a picture of Princess Opeachy, and she was at Fort Wilkins. And what Princess Opeachy is she was a marketing tactic, more or less, that they used in the 50s and 60s at Fort Wilkins to try and draw visitors into see the fort. And I liked the picture because I'd never heard of it before, so I could not find any information about it at all. So I sent out emails, I posted online, like, someone please help me find out what this picture is. Nobody knew anything. Nobody. Until, like, the week after I had submitted all the final materials, and I got an email from the Keweenaw National Historical Park, and they're like, oh, it's this, you know, it's this marketing tactic. And
finally,
it's got a really funny story behind it, where they had to make a choice between either using Princess Opeachy to be a marketing person or stage a reenactment of Native Americans attacking the fort, which never happened. So they decided to go with Princess Opeachy, which I think was a great choice. But it was, I just got the information way too late to include it in the book.
During the selection process of the pictures, how much, I don't want to say leeway, but how much input did you have compared to the Arcadia Publishing? Did they just basically say, you take care of it, or did they, I mean, was there a final word in this?
Basically, I was the final word. They said, you find all the pictures on your own. The only thing that they checked for was the quality of the picture.
All right. And then basically take us back to when you first got started, when you were getting ready to put this together, and any expectations that you had, anything that you felt like, you know, might have been a little bit easier to find. Take us back to how you felt going into this huge, huge project.
Okay. Well, when I first got the contract, we were up at Hakenpiva. And I got the contract over email, and I was really excited, and I wanted to get started right away, but we couldn't really at the time. So I thought going through it that it would be easier to find information about people in the pictures, like their names and things like that, because there's vast resources online, like pasty.net, and there's like a Shoebox Sunday picture thing that people comment on. And I had seen a lot of the pictures on that as well. So I thought, here's a great resource. You know, let's see if anybody here knows some of these people. But that was probably the biggest challenge going through it, was even on the cover of the book, there's five women, and I have no idea who they are. And I researched and researched and researched and just could not find anything. So, so I would say going into it, I thought there were some aspects that would be a little bit easier, like finding the best quality picture and figuring out exactly who the people are, but that proved to be a little bit more difficult than I thought.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, and here with my guest, Jennifer Billock. Tell me, were there any preconceived notions that you had of the area that, I mean, going through these pictures and everything, you're like, wow, you know, I didn't know that.
Not really. I mean, because we've been up there quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so I knew the history already as far as, you know, the cabin cottage culture, the summer residence, and the mining history. What I wanted to do a lot in the book was really highlight the non-mining history. Not that mining is not a huge, wonderful part of the area, but everything you see about Keweenaw County is mostly related to the mine.
Yeah.
So I wanted to, you know, research into the actual people. And that's where any revelations or, oh my gosh, wow moments came about. And it happened a little bit while I was researching into the history of shipwrecks and learning about specific people in the book. But I did know quite a bit before I started it. So,
and, I mean, when people look back at the history of Keweenaw County about the population centers, how it was mostly concentrated, you know, towards the north, towards Copper Harbor, and then slowly but surely, it kept moving south and south. And I mean, in terms of population, I mean, nowadays it's nothing like how it used to be. Did you ever find out from anybody what caused everybody just to keep moving towards the south?
It was a combination of things, mostly with the mines closing. It kind of killed the economy. And then there were other industries, but they grew up in bigger areas around the country. So people, you know, followed the money.
Of course.
The people that still are there and still have cottages there have extensive family history in the area. So that's why they would stay, and they would stay for their cottages. But if you need to raise your family on a single salary, you know, you're not going to stick around in an area where there's no business.
So basically, I mean, the population was going in the direction of the copper mines.
Right. The population was declining with the copper mines. And it's funny because now you see people from all over the country and you're talking to them about Keweenaw County, and I experienced this a lot, and people are saying, oh, I've been to Copper Harbor. Oh, I've done this. Mm-hmm. I've done that. My so-and-so was a miner. And they just have spread out all over the country. So it's a really universal appeal that the book has because people all over America know about the area.
And how was it? Because I tried to like wrap my mind around how, I mean, we just went through one of the more historic winters, and luckily we have roads and everything. And I saw a few pictures of how M26 was just getting built. How did people get to Keweenaw County?
Horse and carriage. Yeah, horse and carriage, or horseback riding, or walking.
I mean, were they using those same methods during the winter?
I would think so. I don't think they could have used anything else. It's interesting. There's pictures of old mail service in the area, and it was dog sleds. You know, so I would think that in the summer it would be the horse and carriage, and in the winter probably the dog sleds.
Was there ever, in terms of like getting supplies and everything, if people wanted something, would it be, you know, better to, would people just basically like stock up during the summer?
Yeah, people would stock up during the summer, and then when it was possible, there were boats that would come to the different mines, and they would bring supplies with them. So it was a combination, I'd say.
And how about with the crops, if people wanted to grow on their own, was there any kind of hope of doing it, or was it just that specific amount of time?
I think the soil is really lush in the summertime, so you can use that time to grow your crops and grow your food, and then you can it, you know, before summer comes, or before winter comes, you put it in the jar, you process it, you make jams and jellies, and then you've got that food for the wintertime.
Excellent.
If you're lucky enough to have livestock, you can kill the livestock. So.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, and here with my guest, Jennifer Billock. Of course, I mean, just like you said, when people talk about Keweenaw County, they talk about the mining industry, and give us a little bit of what you were able to learn and able to find out just from, you know, gathering together these pictures.
As far as the mining history or just
in
general?
Yeah, just the history of the mining in Keweenaw County.
Well, it really kind of evolved from Cliff Mine, and Cliff Mine is where copper was first found in Keweenaw County. It was by a pharmacist, I think it was, who was originally from Pennsylvania and came out to this area to look for copper. And so Cliff Mine, I think, was the first, and then as they started gaining popularity and started making a lot of money, people saw it and they thought, oh man, we got to get up there and get the mining going. So then more and more mines would just pop up. And then, you know, when the mines started to decline, there were the fishing industry and the logging industry that kept the economy going for as long as it could. But yeah, it all started with Cliff Mine.
Would you say that, did you talk with anybody who had ancestors in the mining business?
I did. My husband actually has ancestors in the mining business. And I spoke to a woman named Alicia, and her grandfather or her great-grandfather was one of the mine inspectors.
And was it something like a, I want to say like a family business, but something that, I mean, if the father was a miner, the son was a miner, and his son was a miner?
Absolutely, absolutely. It passed down to as many generations as it could. And you'll find that there were, everyone in your family was a miner. Like, if you were a miner, your brothers were a miner. And there was, there were even, like, independent mining contractors that would work within the mines, and they tended to be siblings or cousins or something like that as well.
But were there any the health concerns or anything about the mines, or was it, I mean, was just maybe the money was that good?
The money was really good. The health concerns mostly affected the coal mines. And the main health concern that arose in Keweenaw County, which is what happened in all of the UP, is that they switched from a two-man drill to a one-man drill, and the one-man drill was incredibly dangerous for one person to operate, and that's what part of what started the mine strikes. It was, they wanted to switch back to the two-man drill, so that was a big safety concern. And then, you know, you're using explosives, you're sticking them in giant sheets of rock.
Yep.
People are going to get hurt when the rock is just falling down from the ceiling and collapsing on you. So there was that. And then if it rained, and you see this now, the mines can flood. So there were a few health issues. Fires were a big problem, too, probably from the explosives. And so they would make these doorways and pack them with wet clay if there was a fire so that it would stop the fire from progressing through the mine.
And, of course, like you talked about that with the copper strike, and a lot of people, I mean, when you read about it, it was a very violent time. Were there any pictures that you couldn't show?
I didn't find any that I couldn't show, and I did find one that I really like. Kind of mean to say that I like it, but it's a picture of three of the anti-strikers who are, like, beating the crap out of this one mine striker, and he's like collapsed on a railroad, and there is like a baseball bat next to them. And
wow,
that's probably the most graphic picture that's in the book, and it's really not even that graphic. But I didn't see anything that was really, really disturbing. I saw a lot of pictures from the Italian Hall disaster, that was not in Keweenaw County, so I didn't really include them.
And was the, could you, maybe, I mean, they say a picture is worth a thousand words. Could you get a sense of how these people were feeling just by looking at these pictures?
I think so. I definitely think so. You can see on their expressions, you know, if they're at camp, but like along the lake shore, and they're smiling, like clearly they're having a great time. Mm-hmm. And there are some pictures from the mine strike in particular where it's groups of women going to the miners' wives' meetings, and a lot of them just look very, like, straight-faced, like, grave expressions. They're going to meetings to talk about the strike, and it's, you can tell that things are kind of in turmoil in their lives. So I think that's so interesting about pictures, is that you can kind of read the people in it without needing any words.
And from the research that you did, why do you think it just fell, the whole copper mining industry fell so hard and so fast?
I think that there's only so much copper you can get out of one mine. And so once you kind of reach your peak and you use all the copper, then, I mean, you've got to close the mine. What else are you going to do? And there were, at that point, other materials that people were mining that they were able to use for the same things that people were using copper for. And I'm sure it was less expensive to use the other materials than it was for the copper, because the copper was not regenerating on its own kind of thing.
And with the copper mines and everything, was there, I'm sure there was some issues with the local Native American tribes?
Not really, actually. So that's part of the reason why Fort Wilkins was built. It was to maintain the peace between the Native American tribes and the miners. But there was never any violence. Fort Wilkins really didn't even need to be there. The Native Americans, they had pit mines throughout the area. And when mining really took off in Keweenaw County, that's where the miners went. They went to those pit mines. But the Native Americans did not really put up much of
a fight, huh? And if you could, because there were a couple of the pictures of the Ojibwa, was how were you able to get those photos? Were you just from the same areas, or were you did you have to go to any of the tribes?
I got them from the Michigan Tech archives, most of them, yeah.
And were you able to learn anything? Because I mean, some of them were in their traditional gear, and then there were some that were dressed like you know, just normal people walking down the street. Was there anything else that you were able to learn about the Ojibwa back in those times?
It was a little difficult to find information out about the Ojibwa. I did learn that they went through an Americanization process.
Mm-hmm.
And Baraga, Father Baraga, he would go around and he created like a dictionary, a translation dictionary, and like set up schools and teach them about American English kind of ways. And then it's just, they kind of just integrated, you know, into the population.
And were they, I mean, was there any pushback, or were they willing and accepting of, you know, learning about it?
From everything I saw, they were willing and accepting. I didn't come across any kind of information about conflicts with the Ojibwa or anything. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
And, I mean, one of the groups of, people that are most commonly associated with this area are the Finnish. What kind of information could you give us about back then? Because at that time, was that the beginning of the immigration for the Finnish people?
I don't think so. And the Finnish are not the only ethnicity in the area. The Finnish came, I believe, a lot more than other ones, but there were also like Hungarians and Germans, Italians, anything you could imagine, but the Finnish heritage is definitely stuck with the saunas and the pasties, which are actually Cornish, but they are very Finnish too. But I don't think it was the beginning of the Finnish immigration into the area. I think it was close to it, but a lot of them immigrated into Minnesota as well.
And you said, I mean, but they were the ones that, you know, the most, there was a point where most of the people coming in were Finnish.
Mm-hmm. And that's because the UP, Sibeli Keweenaw County, is very similar to Finland.
Oh, okay. That's why. It's that snow,
not necessarily,
huh?
Like the sunrise and the sunset, which in Finland is much different. But with all the trees and the wild nature and things like that, they kind of felt like they were at home.
And in terms of all these different, you said the Germans and the Finnish and everything, there wasn't any kind of culture clash between them. It was pretty peaceful, right?
Yeah, it was peaceful. What happened was that everybody brought their own traditions and practiced their own traditions, and everyone was pretty accepting of that. So that's why you see, you know, different, like you can see the Finnish culture and you can see like some of the Italian culture and some of the Cornish culture, and it's just all kind of in harmony with each other.
When someone,
because they mostly came for the mines, so they're not gonna like get in fights, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They might lose their job.
Yeah, they got a job to save. When someone reads through this book, and whether they're from this area or not, or just curious about it, what would you like them to get out of it?
I would like them to see how diverse the history of Keweenaw County actually is, and how it's been a place where people can go to, you know, really feel at home and come to terms with their heritage. And I just want people to know that the mining history is wonderful and fabulous and extensive, but there were other parts of Keweenaw County as well, and they were just as important.
And if somebody would like to get a copy of the book or anything, how can they get a hold of one?
It is for sale online at ArcadiaPublishing.com, at Barnes & Noble, and at Amazon. In the area, there is, Book World has it, and Grandpa's Barn in Copper Harbor. We're doing a signing there on Sunday at 2 or 2:30, and so you'll be able to get a copy of the book there. And then on Wednesday, the 28th, at the Calumet Public Library. But there's stores in the area that carry it now.
Excellent. All right, well, that'll wrap it up. I'd like to thank my guest, Jennifer Billock, for stopping by and talking about her new book. I really appreciate you taking time to talk about this.
No problem. Thank you.
Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer, healthier lives. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at thewolf.com, kbear102.com, or wccy.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Copper Country Today.